Hello and welcome to That Guy's a Maniac, the podcast DS. We are a podcast about video games. My name is Richie. With me, as always, is Farley, aka Kunzy11, who will say hello, explain why we've decided to call ourselves DS this season, and also give you the lowdown on what socials you can find us on and our webpage.
Yes, hello. Thank you, Richie. Welcome to That Guy's a Maniac, the podcast DS. DS is our gimmick for season 4, where, like many of the DS games, they had a playful subtitle, which began with a D and an S for the system, such as Tenchu Dark Secret. What we do is we have the podcast in two halves. We pick a D and we pick an S. But before that, you can find all of our stuff at www.thatguys.co.uk, at thatguysamaniac on all the socials, including newly, you can watch the podcast on YouTube, but it's just a video of an image, so listen to the podcast on YouTube. Yes, that's it. Are you ready? I've got a big bag of D's and a big bag of S's that we wrote at the beginning of this season to randomly pick a D from the big bag of D's in time honored fashion.
Once a week, it is my solemn joy to put my hand in a big bag of D's, and I'm just rummaging around, and oh, I have one. Oh, this is a special D. Desperate.
Desperate. Interesting. Could go in many different directions. I have a big bag of S's, which I am rummaging now, if somebody would kindly provide the sound effects. Thank you. I've got an S, and it is single. I always forget. I mean, I always can't read. It takes me a moment to read. So this episode, Richie, is a desperate single.
In your areas.
In your areas, yes. And with that combination of words in the last 2 seconds, I've come up with an idea for this podcast, and hopefully we can both talk to this idea. What encapsulates the idea of desperate singles? Well, it is I wanted to talk about video games which are one and done. So they've not been remade, they've not been remastered, they've not been had a sequel, a prequel, just games that came out, were a game, and that was it.
Yep. I think that's a good concept. There are plenty of single ones.
Just thought of that. And in thinking about that in the last now 10 seconds, I looked up my backloggery, and I had to go quite a way, actually, to find a game which wasn't a remaster, remake, sequel.
And in fact, or part of a franchise, yeah.
Yeah, or part of a franchise, or a spin-off, or
Yeah.
And it was Resident Evil 2 for the PlayStation.
Yeah, that standalone special title.
Standalone game only came out in 1998, and I think the plan was that they were going to go back and make a Resident Evil 1, but they never did.
Yeah, it's a shame. Because those characters, they had lots of room to develop.
Yeah, I don't know. They're kind of flat. I don't really see how you could build a whole franchise around.
Right. Okay, funny jokes.
Funny jokes. So, Richie, what desperate singles brings to mind for you?
Okay, so thinking about standalone games, games that never got a sequel or a remaster or anything.
Ports are allowed, I think.
Ports are allowed, I would say so. weirdly, up until about a week ago, I would have said Super Mario RPG.
Okay. Yeah.
But it has now been remastered.
It has, yeah.
That being
said, are you playing it?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm going to wait just a couple of weeks. And then I will get it on the Switch. Basically, it's the same game. It's just looking prettier. Apparently there's some quality of life changes. I don't know if there's enough to make it a remaster or a remake, or I don't know. If they don't change the mechanics, is it a remake or a remaster?
I think if it looks different, it's a remaster. And they have changed a few things. There's things which were more acceptable back in the past, which they slightly tweaked. But you can, spoilers, you can still look at Peach's dirty knickknacks or dildo, whatever she's got in the drawer in her room.
Okay. Why is there a mushroom on this stick? Right, okay. That was weird.
So strange.
Right. But yes, of course. So I can't say Super Mario RPG. Yeah. But there are other Square RPGs.
Yeah.
Which maybe perhaps should have had a sequel.
Oh, are you angling for a... They shouldn't have been Desperate Singles. Has that shaped some of your thinking?
It has definitely shaped some of my thinking. So I think a lot of the games I'm going to mention are ones that maybe should have a sequel. Or should have got some more love. And therefore, I'm going to talk about, even though it had a spiritual successor...
Yeah, Final Fantasy VIII.
Chrono Trigger. Right, okay, so where do you lie in this one?
To what extent is Chrono Cross not?
Well, it doesn't have any of the same characters, mechanics, or it's even set in the same world. I mean, Final Fantasy VII versus Final Fantasy VIII.
Or any Final Fantasy.
Yeah. I mean, is it... I would say that, for me, having played through Chrono Trigger, a sequel for me would definitely be a return to time-traveliness with at least something to do with the original team. I do not think that a spiritual successor in Chrono Cross, which was a very different game, happened to have a frog in it, but not even slightly related to the original lot. I kind of see where you're coming from. Just to go back in a different argument. Yes, Final Fantasy VII has nothing to do with the world and the people in Final Fantasy VIII. You can stop making groaning noises. And looking at the Tales of series, like they are all in separate worlds. However, they are mechanically very similar, and in fact,
like James Bond.
Except, like, so for instance, Final Fantasy VII has Cid in it, a recurring character, or not returning character, but a recurring name or concept. And there's also like chocobos are always in it, or Moogles.
Apparently, the Chrono Trigger DS added ties to Chrono Cross.
Did it now?
Yeah, added two scenarios. The second scenario adds ties to Trigger's sequel, Chrono Cross.
I still wouldn't call it a sequel. And I think you could probably argue for a lot of the time. But I, however, I'm going to retract it because I do... No. Yeah. I'm going to retract it because it has Chrono in it. So there, it's kind of the series. However...
Yeah, go on.
Final Fantasy VII, it could have a sequel. So, for instance... Or indeed, there you go. Final Fantasy XIII. 13-2, 13-3, those are sequels.
Final Fantasy VII has a remake and several other games.
Yeah. Okay, like, but what I'm meaning is, like, if it was its own entity, Final Fantasy VIII isn't the sequel to Final Fantasy VII in any fashion, despite it having a chronological update. But yes, Chrono Trigger, the original one on the SNES without the remake that was made in the DS as well. I guess I'm going to retract that. It does have another one. However, my original point does stand. I would still love a sequel to the original Chrono Trigger, getting Chrono and the gang back together again, doing some timey related stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's been missing. And I think that I'm not alone in that desire for having a direct sequel to Chrono Trigger, if you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I do. And I'm just going to push that a little bit more, because what motivates that desire? Because a lot of series, you know, there are calls for, oh, it'd be great to remake this, or they should revisit it, or, you know, his top 10 list of games which needs remaking, or you know, with Pokemon, the minute a remake comes out, everyone's clawing for, there should be a Black Ops 2. So what what it, personally for you, what motivates that? Is it that you really liked that, it sounds like you really like that team of characters and would like to go on other adventures with them?
I think basically that. I think the team that where we left them, it was a whole story, but it would be nice to find out a bit more about what happened with like those characters, the robot from the future. I mean, there was an epilogue, but there's definitely room for them to do their stuff again, or just a weird parallel universe or different thing where they don't know each other but they meet up again or something like that. I think, yeah, explore the characters, definitely.
Yeah, one of my, I think, although we're talking about Desperate Singles, I think one of my favourite series that did that was Final Fantasy X and X-2.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, what happens when
you save the world.
Yeah, what happens after that? And it's interesting, partly because it has very good dressing up mechanics, which we both love.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's kind of, oh yeah, that big thing happened, and, you know, there's a certain amount of going back to normal life, and then inevitably in these big stories there's something that's then gone from the world, be it characters or magic or to see the kind of implications of what the previous game kind of crescendoed up to. Okay, so we put Chrono Cross on the list of
Chrono Trigger. Nice. Chrono Cross is...
sorry, Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
Kind of mad that they haven't really.
I know, it feels like it's a franchise that so many people hold so close and dear to their hearts that not doing it is like, hey, you know what, we just don't want money.
Well, yeah,
we don't like money.
The joke about Final Fantasy VII Remake was that, you know, if Square Enix ever has like a, you know, run of bad financial years, they're like, okay, fuck it, break open the vault. But you would have thought that Chrono Trigger would have been, you know, break glass and emergency before Final Fantasy, but apparently not. Yeah. I don't think it has quite the same following, but you virtually never hear of somebody who's played it who, you know, didn't absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like, it was very, very engaging, all of those characters, and I think the score was really, really good, and the atmosphere that went with that score, like, there is a... And you do things to change it. So, like, you go to this desolate future, or you leave a robot 10,000 years in the past, you know, looking after crops, and then you come back and you reactivate him. And he, like, all right, okay, you're back in my party, but you've literally been dead for so long.
Yeah, I think that was... and actually, that game's doing something slightly different or experimental is one of the things that definitely runs through a lot of the games that I thought of.
Yeah.
When naturally just thinking about this theme in the last 5 minutes or whatever it's been. And yeah, I think it's interesting that the mechanic of the, you know, doing things in whatever order and the bouncing around time is like last on your list of why you'd love to see it again.
What do you mean?
given that it was a very cool mechanic and arguably, you know, one of these which set it apart.
Yeah.
They did such a good job with the story and the characters that the gimmick, if you like, if we're going to compress the time traveling shenanigans, was kind of, you know, and the last thing on your list, personal list.
I mean, the time traveling side of things was, it added a puzzle element to an RPG, a puzzle element that you don't normally get. So it's like, you have the ability to go anywhere in time at a certain point in the game.
And yeah.
Right, so where do I go in order to advance the plot? You know, it's like, what, and like you have open choices, and of course, the narrative will drive you to a certain point and all that thing. But like going back, and I did that story again in the DS. I was very happy to play through and remember things and stuff like that. Like, yeah, it is a bit edgelordy in places as well, though.
I think that's just a natural.
Yeah, 90s.
Yeah, 90s nearly. Like, yeah. A lot of mine are from that period, and as much as I have fond memories about them, they are very edgelordy.
Yeah, well, I think that's part and parcel, or it comes with the territory of the 90s at least.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we talked about that in our dystopian podcast.
We may well have done.
Yep. Yeah, well, right, so give me one of your standalones, your desperate single.
Well, thinking about it, weirdly, my mind is drawn to it really late 90s and early 2000s. Even though there are arguably many more kind of non-franchise sequelized games before that, but there was something about PlayStation 2 era where there just seemed, and I've kind of mentioned it before, there just seemed to be endless creativity in that you would get these games in bizarre settings or with strange mechanics or mishmash of two entire genres in a way that doesn't feel like, although I'm sure if you know, said here are all the available games at the moment, I'm sure it's demonstrably false.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I can only see kind of where all the genres ended up. And so, yeah, so on my list, I'm going to start with 1997's Roscoe McQueen.
Roscoe McQueen?
Yeah.
I do not know what Roscoe McQueen is. Give me a gist. Give me the rundown.
So I'll give you the full title. So Roscoe McQueen Firefighter Extreme is a firefighting game where you play as the titular Roscoe McQueen. And as it suggests, you firefight your way through different levels, putting out fires, saving stranded individuals. Yeah, it's kind of like a puzzle game. Not really a puzzle game, okay. Yeah, but basically a firefighting game, of which there have been very few through the years. And this was one of the games that I first came across, I think, on one of the demo discs, and then my friend bought it and we played through a bit of it. I mean, I'm sure we didn't play it all the way through because I'm sure it gets quite samey. I could be wrong though, maybe, you know, you unlock Metroid style, you unlock various different ways of putting out different kinds of fires. But yeah, fond memories of putting out fires and rescuing guys who would say, "Thank you very much, Mr. McQueen," and then run away. So yeah, I like games like that, which are mechanically they're doing the same as like a shooter or something, but it's different. A bit like Pokemon Snap.
Yeah. Exactly, an on-rails shooter, except you're not killing things, you're taking pictures of them. Yeah. One thing that I would sort of preface at 20 minutes into the podcast is probably, like, you were saying that your mind was cast back to, like, the 90s.
Yeah.
I my mind immediately went to the slew of indie games that are all doing something different at the moment that I am not going to play because it's like old and there's far too many. I think there is I think there's still a lot of creativity out there. It's just not going to make it to anyone, well, the top of anyone's list, really. Because...
Yeah, but I think the ways of being a game, you know, is kind of like the restricted pathways of evolution, right? The ways of being a game today are, you know, is it a platformery thing? Is it a first-person shooter thing? Is it a visual novel thing? And there are very few games, for really understandable reasons, that come out now. You know, wow, this defies genres and borders and boundaries. Whereas playing demo discs off the front of PlayStation magazines, it was a real smorgasbord of, you know, playing shit like Overboard. Here's a multiplayer pirate game, and then, you know, here's Roscoe McQueen. So I feel like there's fewer of those that I am so readily exposed to. So that's just where my mind went. So, you know, fun memories of playing games that were doing something a little bit different.
No, I know. I think when people were putting together demo discs, they deliberately like had a little snippet of everything, because you never got a demo disc that was just nothing but first person shooters, or whatever, you know. So I suppose that was a nice.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a snowboard game. Here's a puzzle game. Here's a RPG, shooter, platformer. And then something completely wacky. I don't have much to say about Roscoe McQueen, just apart from what I've said. Another game from 1999 is Bloodlines.
Bloodlines.
You ever heard Bloodlines. Of that?
I've heard of Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
Well, this is one of the problems of trying to research or look up Bloodlines. Like, it doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. But it was fun. It was there have been quite a few of these games over time. Thrill Kill was another one. It was a multiplayer arena-based game.
Okay.
With a bit of platforming as well. So, you know, kind of... imagine like Worms. No, it's not quite like Worms. I don't think it must be an analog today. But multi-tap, up to four of you, playing in an arena, jumping around, getting power-ups, and kind of beating each other up.
Yeah, I mean, that's a classic, sort of like the Mario Kart Three Balloons.
But it was really, really fun. We played it for hours. Because it's kind of like very quick, very responsive. I think it's been replaced by your Smash clone type game.
Brawlhalla.
The PlayStation 1, there's various other...
The Nickelodeon one for some
reason. Yeah, the Nickelodeon one, and there's like the Twitchy ones. That's where that genre kind of... For a while, 1999 was Bloodlines.
Do you reckon, I recently... there was a special sale on Worms, or it was a Humble Bundle or something like that. I got a bunch of Worms games. There's just so many. Like, there is an obscene amount of Worms games out there. I really hope they haven't... Like, I've not played any of them, but I don't... Because Worms really isn't a single-player kind of thing. But I really hope they haven't messed with it. Like, there was nothing wrong with Worms. It was like, shoot people with the angle. Like... Why does that game still not exist? You know.
Well, you might remember, and long-term fans of the blog will remember, we used to have a running joke about taking the piss out of Team 17.
Yeah.
Because all they did for several decades was just Worms.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not even true then, but you know, we would say these days they're quite. I mean, there are a lot of Worms games. They do the occasional, you know, fun other kind of thing. What was it that I saw the other day? That I was like, oh, that's Team 17, really? But they are still doing, you know, they are still doing Worms. And yeah, I've not touched any since Worms 2.
Yeah. And Worms 2 was already kind of, oh, wait a minute, these graphics aren't pixely anymore.
I mean, it was just what a time to be alive, where almost all the time in the 90s, there was a PC in the corner just constantly playing Worms that you'd all just play. One of the games on my list actually is a kind of spiritual successor. It's Hogs of War from 2000.
Yes, I was going to... It was Rick Mayall that did the voiceover, didn't he?
Yeah, Rick Mayall, as nobody's called him.
For my whole life, I've called him Rick Mayall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I know it's Rick Mayall.
Well, yeah.
But I always feel it's just like that English thing where you just drop a letter.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, it's letter R. I can't say it. R.
Rick Mayall. Well, kudos to you for sticking to your guns. Yes. The Hogs of War was 2000. Essentially a 3D Worms.
But with pigs. With
pigs. Yeah, so a pun on Hogs of War. Much like Worms, you'd also be able to like seed a level in multiplayer to kind of randomly generate terrain, turrets, vehicles. Really, really good. Really, again, hours of that on a multi-tap on these kind of small maps, full of humor, and you know, like the whatever the Monty Python Flying Circus theme tune was, one of the tunes that played in the background. The
nice.
Rick's commentary, he kind of played like a the character of like a drill sergeant, so there was a lot of kind of criticism of war and the, you know, and fake propaganda. Famously, the cover was
taken from Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, a parody of Full Metal Jacket, except, you know, it's instead of in the helmet, you've got like, I think, applesauce and something like that. The single player, it was also quite well developed. So you level up your guy, or your guys would rank up in the different classes. Really tough. The final level in Hogs of War is one of the hardest. Challenges. I think, I don't think we ever beat it, but it was one of those games where my brother was playing it, and we were kind of collectively sat around and cooperatively played it, and I don't think we ever beat it. This is really, really challenging. You get the enemy team and they have a massive turret you have to destroy. But yeah, nothing much came of it. There have been potentially breaking our rules. There is now a Hogs of War like board game.
Well, I think that doesn't count as a remaster, a remake, or a sequel, or whatever.
And I think there was a card game as well.
I'm impressed that such a thing exists, but yeah.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that tells you all you need to know about video game development, right? Is that it's easier to make a board game version of it than a video game version of it. And it was a remote. When did it come out again? 2000. I remember it being a bit of a sleeper hit as well. Just kind of out of nowhere. This is really funny. Fun to play.
But it was also end of life. Like, PlayStation 2 was coming in and things like that as well.
Yeah, those magical times. The end of a console's cycle where games which have just, you know, went from concept a little bit too late to essentially come out on a platform which is essentially already dead, but making the absolute most of this technology at the time. And Rick Mayall's commentary is really does add to it as well. So, you know, when you pull off some incredibly humiliating attack on somebody else or blown up your own guy accidentally, what would often elevate the moment would be whichever one of Rick's procedural pithy comments would come at the end of it. Really fond memories of that. Fonder memories than any of the 2000 Worms games, which neither of us have played.
Yeah. No, yeah. Just
okay. Give me another desperate single.
I'm going to talk about a game which I don't think it needs a sequel, but I think it needs further explored. And it's a game I really, really thoroughly enjoyed, which was L.A. Noire.
Oh, yeah, man.
So, like, that is a game, a detective game. It's all about trying to find out the truth from these guys as well. But you also, like, are investigating the crime scene. But for some reason, it's built on a GTA engine and you can drive to places.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, it all fits in. I love that, the sort of 1940s, 50s, early 50s, early Hollywood, you know, area. And you had this undergoing narrative of the police detective with PTSD, all that stuff going on. And then...
You've also got, like, racist America's, like, a big part of the storyline.
Yeah, and it touches on Hollywood as well because it's set in LA, and it brings in a lot of very, very cool concepts and things. And... like, why isn't there just another... It doesn't need to be L.A. Noire, but why isn't there another detective game like that using the same engine? Set it in the 70s or whatever. do something else.
Yeah.
Have a different character, because obviously that guy's character was, like, you know, that was an arc. And it went through, but, like, I like detective-ing. And I liked the whole asking the people questions, and it was, there wasn't any real, like, danger. Everything was about the narrative, and I dug that. And there should be more of that.
Sandbox game, but with a different spin.
Yeah.
And this one being a detective spin, and then the whole kind of reading people's body language, doubting whether they're telling the truth,
exactly,
pushing them on
yeah.
something. Bit of kind of Phoenix Wright in there as well. Yeah, that was a really good shout. And I think for like a day, you, me, and my wife played it again, kind of cooperatively, right? That was a good day.
Did we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because then we, this is one of the things that frustrates me. Because then we got back. So we went up to Glasgow. We had a weekend there.
Oh, yeah.
One of the days was spent us collectively playing L.A. Noire and kind of shouting our responses at the screen whilst we were playing. Then I picked it up for the PlayStation 3 when we got back. And I've been waiting since then for a time where I'm not allowed to play it on my own. Because my wife's
wow,
like, we should play
okay.
it together. And geez, when was that?
That was... My God, that was my 30th birthday, so it's well over a decade ago.
Yeah, a decade
ago. Not ages on the podcast. But yeah.
There we go. I think I installed it on the PlayStation 3 ready for us to play, but then we've not touched it since. Just sat there waiting. God, I'd love to give that a go.
Yeah, you should. It's a great story.
L.A. Noire is a great shout.
Yeah, but I'm taking it from the perspective of games that deserve a sequel, but... Just don't, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, my detective instincts have noticed that it is the middle of the podcast.
Break time.
Break time. What are we doing in the middle of the podcast, Farley?
Richie, halfway through, when we've done our D section, moving into our S section, we have a break time where we ask each other a card, two questions from Ultimate Video Game Trivia, available at all good calendar temporary pop-up shops in malls. I've got two questions for you, you've got two questions for me. Are you ready for your first one?
I am ready. Are we going to nail these ones?
I've got high hopes for this first one because I know you love this game.
I have zero hopes for the first one.
Okay, great. In the Viva Pinata series,
yeah,
what is the name of the horse pinata species?
Oh.
I know it's been a hot minute since...
It has been quite some time since I have played. I couldn't...
I think it came out at the same time as LA Noire, right?
Earlier, definitely. I know the Chocolodocus.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So, is it a play or a pun on candy and a horse mixed together?
Yes, I'll give you a clue. I don't know if this is what it is actually based on, but it sounds like a nut.
Okay. All I've got is horse chestnut stuck in my head. I'm really sorry.
It's not horse chestnut.
Horstachio. It is horstachio. Wow. Nice. Man, like, I remember all of them had puns and names, but I honestly couldn't tell you one of them. Because there were so many of those animals. That's so cool. That was a bit of a nostalgia hit.
Did that ever have a sequel? It did, didn't it?
Yes,
the two of those.
But it was the sequel that was the good one. Viva Pinata Trouble in Paradise.
Nice.
Because you had that constant threat of a bad guy. Which you actually just cheesed and stopped him ever doing anything. You made him sort of attack the village, but as you did, you built something and he just gets stuck there forever and it stopped anything ever happening. Which is a mechanic that I think everybody did when they played it, because otherwise it was just a really shit game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, right, your first question. Okay. Uh-huh. I think before I finish the sentence, you'll be like, oh.
Okay. Is it Mortal Kombat again?
No, it's not Mortal Kombat.
Good.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Which entry in the FIFA series was the first to include playable women's teams? Now, I'm going to guess it's the two numbers after it are probably the year.
Yeah.
Just guess a number. Guess a number that might be so appropriate to have women's teams in.
That's a good question, actually. I'm surprised that it's even a thing.
Yeah.
To be honest, given that women's football's only fairly recently kind of
hit the mainstream.
Even though it's been going for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say FIFA 20.
COVID, really?
Yeah, but with FIFA isn't the year before.
Yeah, I suppose.
So FIFA 20 would have come out in 2019.
Okay.
I don't think these cards are that old, are they?
It is.
That new.
Wrong.
Ah. Oh.
It was earlier. It was FIFA 16.
What?
I know. I
want to know more. It was like the full women's league, or
I have no idea. But straight up, 16. I would have lent in the same direction as you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good on you, FIFA games.
Yeah. Okay.
FIFA 16. Okay. released in 2017. Which game? I forgot this was the case. Which game was a spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie and was developed by former Rare employees?
I remember this. It's an equally silly name.
It is, yeah. Just like, imagine your grandma trying to remember Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
I'm getting it wrong.
Clubba Baluzi. but it is, it's something like that. And it's, is it a gecko? No, that's Gex.
That's Gex.
Glad
Gex is still rattling around in the Mind Palace for you.
It's also a
pun on an instrument in the same way that Banjo Kazooie is.
Ukulele?
Yes. You're so close.
Banjo Cthulhu. Banjo Cthulhu.
Play that.
Wow. Is it a pun on ukulele?
It is the word ukulele. What?
Really?
Yeah. Ukulele.
Really? Ukulele?
Yeah, YOOKALAYLEE.
Is it a gecko?
I honestly don't know.
It is, it's a gecko and it's got a bat on his head.
Banjo Kazooie kind of passed me by, so the mirror universe version of it is even less interesting.
I have seen this word. Ukulele. So
is
many
it chameleon?
Times. Chameleon, maybe. Some kind of lizard.
He's got the rapid round tail.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Cool. But I've seen the word ukulele and I have never made the connection to the word ukulele. Wow.
This is a bit like my revelatory moment with Miles Prower the other day.
Yeah, I can't believe you never clicked that one.
No.
They ruined it by putting the word Two Tails as his sort of fake name.
Yeah.
Miles Two Tails Prower.
Yeah.
Prower.
Is it Two Tails or just Tails? Miles Tails Prower.
Two Tails.
Is that really?
The
bit in commas is Two Tails.
Yeah.
That's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
I mean...
There's one thing we can't stand here at TDM Towers that's on the nose.
Yeah. I'm going to say... Please.
Miles Two Tails Prower. Inverted commas.
That was Miles Tails Prower,
yeah.
According to the Sonic's Wiki Zone.
Yeah. You've mentally inserted the two there.
I really
Good.
Have, yeah.
Well, okay. My
so it's respect. Less on the nose. Less on
less
the nose.
On the nose. Fine. Acceptable.
Yeah. The only time that Tails has been acceptable.
Yeah. We'll allow it.
Okay. Right. You ready for the last one?
Yes.
And appropriate as well. You ready?
Yeah.
Oh, and it's wrong. The question's wrong.
Oh, no.
Right.
Which game has never had a sequel in the Chrono series?
Who was the artist for the 1995 NES game?
Yeah.
Chrono Trigger.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's so cool that we've got a question that is related.
It is, and then the other, you know, NES. My question was about spiritual successor, so not like a proper sequel, I think.
That's cool.
I think it's still, you know, could have been on our list, ukulele. I don't know, is it Toriyama?
It is Akira Toriyama. I'll finish the question, shall I?
Okay.
Who was the artist for the 1995 NES game, Chrono Trigger?
Yeah.
Who is also best known as the creator of Dragon Ball manga?
Oh, well, that would have been really helpful. I just would have... In my mind, Toriyama just did the artwork for, like, everything.
He did Dragon Ball,
Dragon Quest,
and Dragon Quest is so cool because they actually take some of the costumes. Right, okay, cool. That says done.
Great, that's the end of break time, everybody.
Yeah, no more breaks. Everybody, set up.
More time.
No more fun anymore, guys.
No.
Nah, back to standalone. Or Desperate Singles. Okay. I ended with L.A. Noir. So let's hear one of yours.
One that I haven't mentioned for a while. I think maybe two episodes.
It is
2001's Sheep, Dog and Wolf.
Oh, you don't talk about that one enough. But yes, great standalone.
It's a Sheepdog and Wolf, if you don't know. Again, this magical period of the PlayStation, end of the PlayStation's life, and these crackers were coming out just as it was a legacy platform. And Sheepdog and Wolf has you play as, fuck, his name's not Wiley Coates, it's the other guy.
Yeah, I'll look it up, you continue talking.
Okay, has you play as Wiley Coates' brother, cousin.
brother, cousin.
And Sheepdog, the Warner Brothers character, Ooh. Who's this big sheepdog with like a little tuft of red hair. And it's a puzzle game where level by level you had to try and steal a sheep using the different levels, and you'd also get a bunch of Acme kind of contraptions in which to distract and steal and dress up as per the cartoon Sheepdog and Wolf.
And
Ralph, is it Ralph?
Ralph Wolf and Sam's Sheepdog.
Ralph Wolf, okay. He looks exactly like Wile E. Coyote.
Exactly, yeah. Was there ever a universe where they met?
I don't think so, and I don't know if Ralph Wolf... I remember seeing it, but I can't remember if it was a spin-off from Wile E. Coyote, or if it was occasionally there'd be a Ralph Wolf, or if it was like an intermission between something else. I definitely remember... Sam Sheepdog,
you know,
kind of brutally catching and punching Ralph out all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, they made it into a charming 3D puzzle game. Which was fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
And again, another way of another kind of almost like another genre, I guess. A spin-off, so like surprisingly good and competent, given that it was a lesser-known Warner Brothers series PlayStation spin-off, and solid as, yeah. In a way, it brought out the same feelings as getting stuck on Lemmings levels did, you know?
Yeah.
I can see... the level, I can see the tools which I've got, and then you keep throwing yourself, which is why it's so perfect, because this is exactly what that cartoon was about, right? You keep throwing yourself at the problem,
yeah, until you brute force it, or
failing and failing and failing until eventually you do manage to steal a sheep. Interestingly, and I didn't know this. In America, it was called Looney Tunes Sheep Raider.
Sheep Raider.
Sheep Raider.
Okay.
I don't know if that's what the cartoon was called.
No, the cartoon was called Sheepdog and Wolf.
I believe.
Oh, maybe that again. I've said it with a lot of conviction.
Yeah, really confident.
Yeah.
No, I think maybe the game was just called Sheep Raider. Like, maybe to... for, you know, people who thought they might be buying Tomb Raider.
that would have been brilliant, yeah.
Don't know. But the... I mean, if you've read TJM over the years, I've mentioned this game fairly frequently. The cover art for Sheepdog and Wolf is outstanding. It's just a black background, and then you've got
Ralph. It's a knife and fork. Yeah.
Ralph's face. He's holding a knife and fork, and in the reflection of the knife and fork, you can see a sheep, and you can see Sam the Sheepdog.
So just to quickly touch on the whole Wile E. Coyote and Ralph Wolf thing.
Yeah.
So there has never been a point where they have like encountered each other.
Uh-huh.
However, in the Sheep Raider manual...
yeah.
They canonically say that they are cousins.
Okay.
So, yeah, very interesting that Sheep Raider... I don't like that.
No. Sucks.
has made that whole thing happen.
The manual is adding to the...
the Looney Tunes canon, yeah.
The Looney Tunes canon, which, of course, is very topical over this... potentially cancelled, maybe not cancelled, Wile E. Coyote movie.
Oh, what is this?
It was another... at the time of recording, I think they're making noises about actually releasing it, but it was another, like, Warner Brothers... You know how they did with... Was it Catwoman?
Yes.
Where they made and shot and finished editing an entire film. And
in Glasgow. And everybody in Glasgow was, like, super supportive. And they were, like, really, really, like, great, can't wait for this next one, because the Robert Pattinson one has been doing so well. And like, streets were cordoned off, and people were, like, bitching and moaning, but, like, hey, at least we're going to have Catwoman. And then it gets cancelled, so Glasgow was raging. Or at least the Glaswegian Twitter was. X was. It was just hilarious. It was like, oh, my God, I can't believe they cancelled this film. It took me an extra 40 minutes to get to work.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, if they're not even going to give it its chance to shine, then that was all a waste.
Yeah.
So yeah, similar thing happened. They shot, animated, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And voiced and completely finished Wile E. Coyote movie, and then announced they wouldn't be releasing it. And then,
is it because it's been rubbish, or is it because it's potentially absolutely going to be cancelled or something?
No, I think it's just the same as Catwoman. Just this idea of like it will cost the studio more to actually release this than it would to not.
Oh, okay.
Because of tax break schemes and however they work.
Oh.
But it kicked off enough of a kickback that there was, as I vaguely remember from scrolling through, Warner Brothers said, oh, we might actually release it.
You know that there is a live action Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner movie from the 1970s, early 1970s?
No.
it's obviously it's not Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner, but it is Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jack Palance.
Oh yeah, yeah. No,
in a film, yeah, yeah. But basically everything that happens to Jack Palance is exactly what Wile E. Coyote would do. And I guess Arnold Schwarzenegger, who plays this bodyguard for the princess, is the Roadrunner, but doesn't go meep meep at any point. That was my Arnold Schwarzenegger accent.
Very good. I wasn't reading the Wikipedia page for Coyote versus Acme, which is the live action.
Okay.
Film.
Oh, wait a minute. I think that does ring a bell now. Anyway, Sheepdog and Wolf, very good addition to the Desperate Singles.
Desperate Singles, yeah, one and done. We never saw anything quite like it, and we won't see anything quite like it again.
Yeah.
Richie, give me a Desperate Single.
This one's a more recent, well, recent-ish one. And it is a Desperate Single, and I hope it stays a Desperate Single.
Warcraft 3.
Undertale.
Oh, and really?
I mean, I'm only bringing it up because it definitely should only exist as a one-hit
thing.
But isn't
Deltarune, you know, because they all have this, it's an anagram of each other, isn't that?
Is it?
Yeah, there's Undertale and Deltarune.
What?
So after Undertale came out, I think, there's a whole like cryptic campaign and this thing called Deltarune, which obviously uses the same letters as Undertale.
Okay.
Also developed by Toby Fox, came out.
All
I don't know if they're related to each other at all. Vamp whilst I read.
Okay. Well,
takes place in a different setting.
I think I looked at the logo and it's similar enough for me to say I shall retract this one as well.
I don't want
to spend that much time on it. I mentioned it and I thought, oh, that's quite a cool, edgy, indie one that people don't talk about, and it's reasonably new. Okay.
Okay.
Let's move on. I had another one. Oh god, they're all really pandery ones.
Pander away, my friend.
So the one that everybody wants a remake of, Simpsons Hit and Run.
No, that's not pandery.
It is. The whole internet wants this to not be a desperate single. And I don't know what it is that stops them making a remaster or whatever. Because everybody wants it. It was a good game. Yeah, free money. But it seems like whoever made it just doesn't want money. Doesn't like money. I made the same joke twice in the same episode.
And it's not like, you know, it's not like The Simpsons is precious about what they can be turned into, right?
I know, at this point they're like...
It's not a picky estate, The Simpsons one. Yeah, slap it on that, fine.
Yeah. God, that's so true. Probably more merchandise for The Simpsons. Is that not like a thing as well? There's more Simpsons merchandise than there is anything else.
I could believe it.
Yeah.
I could believe it.
I mean, now, I think it must be like Pokemon. Yeah, yeah.
I was reading a mad stat about how Evangelion is like one of the most merchandise franchises of all time.
I mean, and that's crazy because it's not even accessible for many, many countries.
I know.
Not even accessible. Like,
and I would fucking love some decent Evangelion merch, actually. Can I fucking find any? Even when I was in Japan, it's like about, but it's, you know, kind of, here's Evangelion characters telling you where the toilet is. Not, you know, here's a... Is a fucking anything I can buy.
I love it. It's like the male mech on the door and the female mech in the door.
No, it is. It's crazy. Like, you know, because there's loads of tropes about a geek coming to Japan and coming back and being like, in Japan. But literally, in Japan, the like, don't do cybercrime poster is Ghost in a Shell, and the be careful when you swim on the beach is Pikachu and Alolan Raichu. Like, it is like, you know, the don't sweat on the subway is Splatoon characters. Like, it's literally everywhere, including Evangelion. Yeah.
But maybe maybe it's Evangelion price per capita, because all I ever see about Evangelion merchandise is basically somebody's made another statue of a giant mecha.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why it comes under the most merchandise thing.
Yeah, it's actually three things, but they're all £450,000 each.
Yeah, exactly. And when you've got 50p Bart Simpson keyrings.
yeah.
But no Evangelion keyrings ever. Nobody's allowed a keyring, you know.
No. We don't want to... And even the creator, I forget his name, has kind of said, I don't care about merchandising. It's all different universes. I just don't give a shit. Let's make as much merchandise as possible. Yeah, weird. It wouldn't be even in my top 10 if you were to ask me the question, you know, what's the most merchandise franchise? Nowhere near, because I'd fucking love some. I don't have any. I've got like one statue, I think, which I... anyway, what were we talking about? Simpsons Hit and Run. Yeah, yeah. Good shout.
Cheers. another pandery one, which I never played, but people always... have such a like a strong opinion that it's like one of the best games ever and all that sort of stuff. Did you ever play the Jack Black one, Brutal Legend?
No.
Everybody talks about it so fondly, and it was its own. It never got a sequel. I mean, I don't know if the guy dies at the end or something.
Yeah, it was because the premise of the game was, you know, what if the front cover of all those metal albums was a game.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time they put the big marketing bucks into it, because, you know, it's a new IP and Jack Black's behind it, and I never played it though. Was it an RPG?
I think it's one of those RPG hack and slashers.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's Brutal Legends, good shout.
What else do I have?
I think we're on honorable mentions now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're literally just sort of rattling them out.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me a couple of your honorable mentions.
So some of my honorable mentions is from 1998, Broken Helix, a Konami game, set in Area 51. Bruce Campbell does is the main character, and it is, I mean, it's just awful to listen to. You can just hear him in the sound booth. I mean, he even says like groovy.
Oh God!
And like, yeah, you go up to these NPCs, and he just, you know, it's just Bruce Campbell insulting the Bruce Campbell way. But the cool thing about it was that the story was kind of in real time, but it had four different endings depending on what you did.
Oh, nice, nice. I like that.
Yeah, so, you know, if you went to this floor, if you didn't do this, if you didn't defuse the bombs, it wouldn't stop. It would kind of carry on to get the four different endings. Looked and played like absolute shit. So, okay, it was tough as nails as well. At some point, like, there's closing laser force fields around every level, so I never got to one ending, let alone four endings. But yeah, funny kind of experimental game. From 2000, a game which I own and really should get around to playing, Kudelka.
Kudelka?
Yeah. Is a
Kudelka.
Kudelka. K-O-U-D-E-L-K-A. So a bunch of people, a bunch of Japanese developers from Square and elsewhere, I think, made a kind of tactical horror RPG.
Okay.
But set in Wales. Set in a monastery. Okay. In Wales. Had four discs. And then when you'd enter battles, you'd enter like in a quite a in-depth tile-based arena battle. Again, I remember it being quite hard, but I looked up on how long to beat, and apparently it's only 12 hours long. So
wow, okay.
Four discs for it.
You know what, but if you were to pose a question of,
yeah,
name a video game set in Wales.
Yeah, I know.
I'd have been stumped. I'd, like, you know, Satan just kills my family, you know?
Like, is Nina Cooney set in Wales or just everyone Welsh?
What?
Nina Cooney? Do you remember that?
No.
It's like a game that everyone said was great.
Okay.
And then maybe an anime. One of the...
It's a Ghibli production.
Pig Dog Man is Welsh or something.
Oh, right. Well, there you go. Again, if you said name a Welsh character in any video game, I'd have been stumped. I'd have been thinking there must be someone in Discworld. Did Rob Brydon do a voice?
Oh, there you go. Kudelka. Four-disc tactical horror RPG. But I remember the bad guys being really kind of freaky. Yeah. So, you know, instead of having like a headless man, there'd be like a three-headed man.
Okay.
So like a body and then a head and then attached to that head, two other heads just hanging off the side.
Oh, lovely. Kind of like a wheezing...
sort of like a wheezing, yeah, but a man. And so all the enemies were kind of themed like that, and the monastery was really scary. Good. Again, 2000, though, so I think it just missed its audience.
Yeah. Speaking of Square, though, don't you have like a special edition or a big box of, or an unopened box of some Square game that you really liked? Vagrant Story or something?
Oh, yeah. We've got The Last Story.
The Last Story. Is that not a one-hit wonder as well?
It is. It's also fucking brilliant.
Well, there you go. Should it get a sequel?
No, it didn't, no.
No, should it, though?
It was literally The Last Story.
Right, okay. Brilliant.
It could do. I mean, again, like pretty much all the ones we've spoken about, really good mechanics. And similarly to you and Chrono Trigger, I'd either love to see what happens next with those characters or get a game on the same kind of premise. Because although it was a really small hub and you only had like a certain number of missions, but each of the combats could play out differently. This small hub, I mention it often, feels more living, breathing, and larger than many kind of, you know, like vast worlds, because there's just so tightly designed and intricate. And yeah, the more you run around that place, the more the kind of larger it is.
Yeah.
Love the last story. Other ones to rattle off. Did you ever play Dark Watch from 2005?
Nope. Dark Watch. That's so edgelordy.
This is the game I was thinking of when we were saying it was edgelordy. So it was heavily inspired by kind of Halo, Half-Life, Time Splitters, all of those shooters from that period. But it was essentially vampires in post.
Wow.
Civil War,
wow,
America.
Brilliant. Like Underworld sort of style.
Yeah. Western. No. Underworld?
Yeah, you know that series where they're all vampires and...
Yes.
Bill Nye's a vampire and things like that.
Yeah, but set in kind of frontier America.
Okay.
Cowboys.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Friend of the podcast, or that isn't listening to it, so maybe he's not a friend, played through the entire game split screen. It's a first person shooter, but the interesting thing about it, I think one of the reasons why it's so compelling, is because much like what was happening with other series at the time, it was kind of planned as this, we're going to do this big like cross media franchise. They did loads of marketing. There was like a sequel. I think there was a film. I think there was a comic book. And you look at it now, and like, how can you be that creative about what is essentially the edgelordiest of characters, the female vampire sidekick who was like, you know, in the, do you remember that Playboy Digital Girls edition?
No.
So it was horribly. Early 2000s period, where it's like, you know, video games have finally grown up, and here's like a bunch of digital hotties. And so it was like Fuckface and Blood Rain, the female character from Dark Watch, you know, all these.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, arguably more famous than the actual game itself, even though the game is really, really good. And then for, I don't know, usual game development reasons, the sequel never happened. I think the development was really problematic and drawn out. The film kind of died on the vine. I think the comics did come out. But that was a good... that aside, it was a good game. Even though it is extremely...
edgelordy. Yeah. Vampires with guns is always...
Yeah, Wild West vampires with guns. I mean, come on.
Did you ever see the Underworld films?
Yeah, I did. Sadly, more of them than I really needed to. And in fact... has caused a bit of a mystery in our household, because we have the first three on DVD, even though my wife or I definitely didn't buy them.
Nice.
Yeah. So we kind of have this argument every now and then when we rediscover it, as to, I can't believe you bought this, but I didn't buy it.
Nice. Yeah. Well, yeah, no, like, I watched them. I remember watching the first one thinking, wow, this film really isn't memorable. And then proceeded to watch the remainder of the films. Nothing sank in at all.
No.
All I remember is Bill Nighy being a big vampire dude.
Yeah.
That was about it.
I think there is a niche for those kind of films. Films where you don't really know what you want to watch. You can't remember this. Put it on. Turn your brain off for 90 minutes. You know, it's entertaining enough.
Yeah, it killed time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably what it's good at. Another game from 2000 was Giant Citizen Kabuto.
Oh, that rings a bell.
Again, very strange game with quite a big single player, which taught you how to play this asymmetric shooter slash RPG. And it defies, it really was asymmetric, like before asymmetric gameplay was really a thing. So kind of like StarCraft, except one of you plays a giant stompy thing, another one is kind of like essentially shiny sea elves, and the other one is like bang bang marines, but they played very, very differently. and the storyline would kind of teach you how to play each of them. But it looks like a British game, and if you look up a trailer, you're like, oh yeah, this is a quirky humor British game. But it was developed in San Francisco, I think.
Okay.
So yeah, and you start off playing, oh yeah, this is a shooter, and then it kind of shows you about how you build your bases, and then you have missions where essentially build. Apparently I've only ever played the single player, and not even all the way through. I think I got to the elf lady, but never to the titular Citizen Kabuto. It was stonking in multiplayer.
Stonking.
Famously so. Stonking. Yeah. Because it's not just reskinned units. They are very, very different ways of playing, but quite well balanced.
Okay.
Yeah. Look at the cutscenes alone. They are still remain entertaining. There's like a pretty grouchy Scottish. You know, like the aliens from Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
There's like a guy who looks like one of the aliens from Mars Attacks, but it's supposed to be like a wizened shaman, but is just a potty mouth Scottish.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's fucking brilliant. But I think because it was so mental in terms of what is this game, it has never kind of translated into anything. There was a Kickstarter for a spiritual successor, but didn't really go anywhere. Critically acclaimed as well at the time. Mm-hmm. And then my last shout out, again from 2001, is Project Eden.
Okay, yeah. Have you played much of Project Eden?
Given any opportunity, I will talk about. Yeah, me and enemy of the podcast, Chuff72, played through it. The brilliant thing about Project Eden is you can play it four player split screen. I think we played it four player, but with two of us.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Okay.
No, I think it's set up in such a way where you can kind of park a character and move. Is this huge campaign, but each of the four characters has very different skills, and you need to kind of combine them all to
get through the puzzles. Yeah.
Very still really rare to have a game like that. And I think that's what's typified a lot of the games that are on my list was, take this and this, take this and this, take this and this. But some of these games are critical successes. I don't think many of them are financial successes, and they all kind of remain as like experiments.
Yeah. And I suppose that's the gist of what this episode is like half the things that we are talking about we want sequels to, but it's because maybe they did something a little bit different and it's too off the wall, or they don't think they can catch that lightning in a bottle again sort of thing.
Yeah. But what back in the day would be, what on earth do you put on the back of the box bullet point?
Yeah.
Sometimes RPG shooter.
Sometimes RPG shooter.
Yeah.
Nah, you know that they would sell that like as complex and intriguing leveling up RPG system with first person shooting, unparalleled first person shooting. That's how you sell that game.
I don't know. I don't think that copy is shifting.
I mean, certainly not my words coming out of my mouth.
The idea, certainly.
Let's kill this. We'll find out if we ever get a sequel to this episode.
Yeah.
Next week. That guy's a maniac.
Why do you bite me?